Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, June 20th, 1996. This morning in the fireside room, our speaker is Lana Dahlberg Landaverde. She will be continuing her series on El Salvador. Today's session is number 4 and is titled Faith, Empowerment, and Community Development. Let's listen in.
And then start. My name again is Lana Dahlberg Landaverde, and some of you are regulars in this class, so see your faces. And this particular session is entitled Faith, Empowerment, and Community Development. So we're focusing more on the current work of that's going on in El Salvador in terms of development. And in the previous sessions, we focused more on what I've gleaned and many others that were in the sessions have gleaned from the Salvadorans and what they've learned in terms of their faith and the experiences that they've been through. So what I'd like to do today is show a video that was produced or that is focused on the work of one of the Salvadoran NGOs, non-governmental organizations that we work with, and it's in kind of like a south central part of El Salvador. It's on the coast, on the Pacific Ocean, and they're focused on doing development work. So you see kind of what they're doing, what we're supporting there, and then I'll bring it back to a few main points that I want to put out, and then we'll have a discussion. So I have to turn off the lights and put on the video.
In this country, where violence and tenderness are mixed together, interweaving its dreams and its history, live 5,800,000 people, 276 persons for every square kilometer. Every year, 182,000 people are born and 42,000 die. Nearly 70% of all Salvadorans live in poverty. Others fled or had to take part in the armed conflict. The war left in its wake pain and uncertainty. The peace accords signed between the FMLN and the government opened unprecedented new options for the history of the country. Decades of authoritarianism and militarism came to an end.
Muchas cosas están cambiando en El Salvador.
Many things are changing in El Salvador. Life now has new meaning. Diverse organizations are working on national reconstruction, developing projects and programs in various provinces of the country. The Cordes Foundation is one of these organizations. San Carlos Lempa is located in the southern province of San Vicente, along the banks of the largest river in the country. This zone was one of the most affected areas during the years of the war and was converted into a fearful and deserted place. Have decided to return to their homes and their land. Others have come from farther away to begin a new life. This region of the country, Cordes, the Foundation for Cooperation and Rural Development of El Salvador, is working, accompanying the material and spiritual reconstruction effort of the communities. Until the period when the peace accords were signed, Cordes directed its operations from the national office. The arrival of peace provided different conditions and made it possible for the foundation to have its base of operations on site where it carries out its projects. That is how Cordes has come to be here in the south of San Vicente, has set up an office and is installing a basic infrastructure. This infrastructure will subsequently be transferred to those who are the protagonists of these projects. My name is Simon Antonio Amaya, and I am responsible for the sector of San Carlos Lempa, where Cordes is working. I work with the CDR, which is the complementary organization which oversees development in the San Carlos area. The concrete work of the CDR is to see to all of the social development in the 16 communities which make up the sector, everything related to health, education, etc. We also oversee the work of sister parish and sister community relations, since we have several communities with these kinds of ties to churches and cities in different parts of the world. So self-sufficiency can become a reality, we are putting into practice what we call a sectorial financial system. That is, this is the instrument which will play the role of bank, of overseeing financial activity, and which will be a lending institution. Bit by bit, once this first phase is consolidated, this will also become a savings institution. With this, we hope to educate the people to come to understand that once they begin to accumulate capital, that they need to put money in the bank to provide a base for funding community projects. Also, we are creating an enterprise called the Multiple Services System, whose mission is to rent out the necessary agricultural machinery for the cultivation of the land, to provide technical assistance and advice on crops and livestock, trainings, agricultural inputs and supplies, and marketing assistance. We think that the latter is especially important so that the communities can overcome the limitations of traditional marketing channels and achieve better prices for their products. Also, we hope that we will be able to secure more competitive prices in the purchase of their agricultural inputs.
Zona están asentadas 3,500 personas ubicadas en 16 comunidades.
In this zone, there are 3,500 people in 16 communities who have 6,000 manzanas of land negotiated between the FMLN and the government in compliance with the peace accords. These lands were transferred to the communities in the form of long-term credit, and currently they are in the process of being given legal title.
Nosotros hemos tratado toda la manera de ver con las comunidades o las cooperativas la mejor forma de tener ya la tierra.
We have tried to work together with the communities and the cooperatives to come up with the best arrangement for ownership of the land. We contemplate a mixed system in which both the work of the cooperatives and individual family parcels would exist. We have been successful in assuring that the title to the land is in a collective form, and afterwards the cooperative itself decides how the family parcels will be handed over to the members of the cooperative. In addition to promoting an economic base which permits the family to acquire the goods necessary for their subsistence, Cordes is training women and men in administration, use of computers, agricultural and accounting techniques, and maintains workshops for repair and maintenance of agricultural machinery. With its program of credits for agricultural inputs and supplies, the production of basic grains, such as corn and rice, and non-traditional crops, such as sesame, cashews, watermelon, and cantaloupe, and promotes livestock production and dairy products. Unused for a long time, for which reason the flora and the fauna have been preserved. Cordes and the communities use appropriate technology such as composting latrines, bicycle transportation, Maya pumps to withdraw water, all with the goal of preserving the ecological balance. The ocean and the river provide various species of seafood which permit the population to improve its nutritional intake and in the future to sell these products on the market. Which we urgently must resolve, such as the reconstruction of the dikes and drains, which after the years of the war have been left in ruin. This is what has made more serious the problem of flooding during the rainy season. Next season we'll have to see what we can do to replant here, to go on working this land, because that's our mission, to work the land, to do what we can to make it bear fruit. In this case, we, the CDR and Cordes, are soliciting funding from diverse national and international institutions to try to resolve this problem.
También estamos desarrollando acciones para reparar la calle principal
Also, we are carrying out efforts to repair the main road and some of the secondary roads which connect the paved coast highway with the island of Monte Cristo. In the area of recreation, along with the CDR, we are supporting football activities in the communities, which we see as preventative mental health care. There is a healthy sports spirit which contributes to the quality of living together in these communities. Because of the fertility of the soil and its natural beauty, San Carlos Lempa may convert itself into a place of tourist attraction and social development. And sand, where the river and the ocean embrace, mixing their waters. The pain of the war is left behind, and together, women, men, old people and children, nurture with work and caring the seed of hope, of reconciliation, and of peace.
Here in time for the presentation.
Yeah, that's right.
And the film, parts of it were in Spanish. So. So you saw a little bit. This is a very hopeful, hope-generating film. Can I see all of you about the flowers? you can move forward. There's plenty of chairs.
No, it's
when was it filmed?
This one was produced, I think, in 93 or 94. Might have been as early as 92. I'd have to pull the video out to see. The foundation that it focused on, the Cordes Foundation, has been a foundation that's been supporting the rural communities for since 87, for a decade. So they were with them during the war, and then after the war, they began to really focus on development, and it's a foundation that the SHARE Foundation, which I work with, has been working with since for the last decade, pretty much. So what I want to do is just say, this is the first time I've actually introduced a little bit more about the organization that I work with, and maybe even pass out some literature. Yeah, just pass it around. The SHARE Foundation, Building a New El Salvador Today, has been in existence since 1981, and really the foundation was formed because there was a call from the Archdiocese of San Salvador for a group that would be based in the church-based group to begin to provide relief work, relief aid for all the refugees that were fleeing the massacres at that time. The 80s, early 80s, there were heavy aerial bombardments in the countryside, and that produced a lot of refugees that came to the churches in the city. So that was where we got our start, and began to work with the Lutheran Church and other Protestant churches, primarily the Baptist and the Episcopalian Church, in the early 80s. And then with the refugees returning, which some of us have been talking about for the last couple of sessions, the churches were really work together. And again, this is the sense of war where everyone comes together to overcome a common problem, which was the war and the repression. And all the churches worked together in an organization called Diaconia. It was even the Roman Catholic Church was part of that ecumenical organization. And since the end of the war, that's all broken up. It's part of the post-war phenomena that things tend to, there's not the common problem to unite people, to overcome that one common problem that they all experienced, which was the war. But we have been working, after the peace accords were signed, the Share Foundation began to focus more on development of, in these rural communities, and have, during the war, our vision was much more of accompaniment, of being with the people and providing the emergency aid that they needed. And then after the war, it was, well, how do we, what is our vision of development? What now that there's no longer a war going on, but the economy is still very poor, and the people are still very poor, how do we, what is our vision of enabling them to improve their lives, to have better living conditions, to live as dignified children of God? And so we began to work on that, and I guess I'll lay out some elements of our vision of development, and then we can talk about that. And I thought about this in the context of certain tenets of our Christian faith, or elements, one of which I would just put out as diversity of gifts, but unity of spirit, that's something that we hold to. And maybe point to the text in the image of the body of Christ in 1 Corinthians 12 or in other parts of the Bible, Ephesians 4, where you have all these different gifts. And so it's not that everyone has to be the same to be together, to be united in community, but you encourage that each of those different parts of the body or each of those gifts are developed, are strengthened, and that they contribute then to the whole. And that it's a process in the same way that the Ephesians 4 talks about growing up to Christ, who is the head of the body, and kind of the maturation process that text talks about. We see development more as a process, that it's not the end goal of school, building, infrastructure, you know, the material gain, but it's more the process that takes place within the human, within the person. So the focus is more on skills building, on the protagonists of that process, on the people themselves, so that they are growing. And then in growing, if they are really the protagonists, there's going to be lots of mistakes, because that's how you grow, is you learn from mistakes. And that's been, my programs, I direct a sister parish program. We work with 43 different parishes in the United States of different denominations who have a sister community. And they raise funds, and they send delegations, and they support development projects. Some of them raise more money than others. Sometimes that's the most frustrating thing is, many of us who have, higher education degree levels, or have, live in an environment where we have a certain sense of how things should be done, or to allow people who maybe only have a first grade or second grade level education at the most, and of course a whole wealth of life experience, but in terms of just very basic math skills, to allow them to really do the planning, to allow them to come up with a vision and to think of how they want things to be and to try to do it. Because the temptation is, when you have the skills, is to go in and do it for them. And so that's something that I struggle with the parishes here is, well, this is a process. The process itself is the important part, and not so much the end goal.
So sometimes, in essence, you don't want to enable them, but encourage them to build their self-esteem and build that restructure, that foundation that's kind of disappeared because of the war?
We want to, I guess the word is empowerment. They're the protagonists, but there are the different elements that we see in this are... One is a kind of that they need to have, that they need to come together with a common vision. And I guess I could group all these elements under maybe the theme of community, that we still very much support that it's a community. And you saw here they talked about 16 communities in this area. Cher has chosen to focus in the area that the film was produced, although we have sister communities in El Salvador that are all over El Salvador. But in terms of the funds that we get from foundations or from donors, or that we really concentrate our funding sources, it's in that area, San Vicente. And so the vision that we have is maybe, or the elements of the vision development, if we looked at the sense of community, of this unity and coming together, maybe the first thing that needs to happen is for people to have a common vision. And another one of the texts that I was just kind of reading this week, it's been great for me just to do some reading. I came across Philippians 2. It talks of be one of one mind. And I thought about how that applies, that the people need to have a sense of what they want with their community. And even though now in the war there are some problems of dissension within some communities, and now that there's not the common enemy just that you're fleeing from, there's been sometimes petty jealousies, and it's easy for me to say petty jealousies, but it's very hard to live when you're so desperately poor, and certain things happen for some people and they don't happen for you. And we know in every community, in every church, there's problems, social problems and problems between people. But to come to a common vision of what they want in their community, that's kind of the starting point, at least at the level of the leadership. And that we try to, again, coming back to you, sense of enabling them, to give them the sense that, yes, they can do it. They, to believe in themselves. There's a hymn in the Salvadoran peasant mats, when the poor believe in the poor, they can overcome, or we will be free, I think is how it goes. The sense that, yes, we can do this. We can create a better life for ourselves. God calls us to us, and this is where the faith element enters in again. But God desires a dignified life, better living conditions for us, for our children. And so the sense that, yes, we can plan, we can think of what can happen to our community, we can envision, we can come up with ideas. And then the hard work of actually doing that planning. So, again, our focus is on the community, the members themselves being protagonists. And then coupling with that, of course, is skills building. And so we do a lot of trainings, or we ourselves don't do the trainings per se, but we fund Salvadoran organizations like the one you saw here who are doing the trainings in accounting, because so many of these are rural areas. I think 40% of the population in El Salvador is rurally based. It's kind of rural business administration. How do you run a cooperative? How do you fill out a loan application? So just some very basics, and even just basic math and basic literacy is important. And then so trainings just to help the people draw out their gifts and strengthen them. And here I was going to tell a story of maybe one person that I met in this same area of San Vicente. And the last trip I took was in October of 1995. And it was a very hard time for the community because it was the second flooding that they'd experienced. The last 4 years they've had three floods and one drought. So pretty much every year they've lost their crops. And it was a very hard situation for many of the people, and maybe maybe 11 of those 16 communities had lost a significant portion of their crops. But we were there, and I kept looking at this one man who'd been elected president of what they called in this film the CDR, which is the grassroots organization kind of encompassing all of these communities. And he's an older man, very animated, strong leader, very, very indigenous, in his appearance, very handsome man. I kept looking at him, he had a great smile. And then we were sitting next to each other in the van going up to one of the communities. I said, you know, you look a lot like someone I met during the war whose name was Francisco. And I started to explain. He got in his smile, got really, he just this radiant smile. He says, yo soy. He says, I am Francisco, because he had been introduced as Manuel. And what I realized is that he had lived through the war. He had been he was one of the older combatants in the FMLN, and he was a native of this area of San Vicente, but had been, and he had grown up on the coffee plantations and worked as one of those seasonal laborers where they just survive from harvest to harvest, and then they walk and they go to another part of the country where there's maybe the coffee is being harvested at a different time of year, or the sugar cane is being cut at a different time of year. So it's just a marginal existence. And his father had been involved in the union organizing, and then he himself had been involved in the union organizing and had seen a lot of repression, and eventually went into the mountains and helped people flee those military invasions in northern El Salvador. And then when I met him, he was a wounded combatant, and he had several wounds, but this one that I had a delegation, we had two doctors on the delegation, he was complaining of not being able to walk hardly at all, and apparently a bullet had transversed his hip, and so it damaged his sciatic nerve. I guess that's what it's called, right? The major nerve that goes...
Sciatic,
thank you. Thank you. And so he had problems with his leg, and he didn't understand that the bullet had entered up here. And we were, you know, trying to say, well, maybe the doctor's saying you really shouldn't be walking, because they walked 8, 10, 15 miles a day, depending on, you know, where they had to get to and if the government army was coming or not. And he said, but I can't tell my commanders not to walk. And that was the last time I seen him. I said, but you look so different. And he says, well, I was dying then. And he was very emaciated. And here he was, after we got to the community, he showed us he had his own parcels, they were saying. So there's cooperatively owned lands, and then there's community parcels. And he was so proud of his little cashew seedlings. These are trees, little... Cashews are grown on little bushes or trees. I guess they get to be trees, but these are little. And they have a fruit, and then at the end of the fruit is what then becomes the cashew nut. And there was a picture in there, but you probably didn't. Mm-hmm. Did you see that? Yeah. A kind of a reddish fruit, and at the end was like this funny little thing sticking at the end of the fruit, and that was a cashew. He was so proud of that. And he, just his story, seeing that he's come from that experience of war, and now he had his little bit of land and his diversified crop that will provide some income for his family besides his corn and beans. But then later in the meeting, he said, you know, I just don't feel like I can do this work, because he was now the president of a grassroots organization, need to be running meetings, looking at how they're going to be essentially doing the envisioning and the planning for these 16 communities. How are they going to insert themselves into the national market with their products? And he says, I just don't feel like I can do this. He says, give me a gun, or give me, put me in the mountains with a bunch of people that are fleeing from the army, and I can do that. I can get us to safety. But he says, I just don't feel, you know, he looked like he was more like in his late 50s, but I think he was actually in his mid 40s. He says, you know, of all the years, I just feel like how can I learn? You know, how can I go back to being a 12-year-old? Or, you know, a young person learning basic math and reading. But we said, no, this is what, you know, this is what it's all about. You can, and you're called to it, and you've been elected to be the president, and you've shown a lot of leadership. So again, that's the challenge, is people now moving on into new stages in their life. Maybe the last few elements I'll go over briefly. One is that women are like a generation or two behind men. And if you saw in the movie, most of the meetings of where people were talking in cooperative forums of, it looked like it was a cooperative, or they were, it was a lot of men. And so it's because women, there's a much higher illiteracy rate among women than there are among men. And so we have chosen as a focus, and really believe as part of development, you can't allow that. Women in many parts of the world, and especially definitely in El Salvador, they're like 33% of the heads of households are headed by single women who are either widows or, because of the culture, their husbands are off. The fathers of the children are off somewhere else, and they're left to raise the children. You have to incorporate those women. They have to be incorporated at all levels, not just out there. Many times, the women are actually doing some of the farming, but they're not involved, like in the cooperative's planning process or in the envisioning. And because of how they've grown up, they can be very quiet in meetings and just feel that that's not part of what a woman is called to do. So working with that and say, no, you're part of this whole process. And so we have a focus on what we call gender analysis. So in all projects we support, also that needs to be a goal of increasing the participation of women. And that's certainly a challenge. And I think this generation is gonna continue to be a challenge. Even the young women who are combatants, when they reinsert themselves or come back into civilian life, go back into the same roles. They may have had children that were being raised by their grandmother or their mother, and they come back into the same traditional roles.
So because of those traditional roles, who models for them in this gender process? I mean, like certain trainers, teachers, people who volunteer through your organization?
Maybe it's not so much models as discussions,
right.
And trying to have it come from Salvadoran women themselves rather than from outside feminists or something.
When at a certain stage we call consciousness raising?
Yes. But in a way that they try to do it, what they call mixed, meaning both men and women, so that you're not pitting men against women or not dehumanizing men. And it's a big struggle because that's the sensitivity. Both men and women have been raised in these traditional roles, but helping to everyone to see the value of women and what they can contribute.
And when they combine those together, then is it like equal parts of you know X amount of women, X amount of men, and do they incorporate like a holistic approach, you know, including the spiritual end of it?
Well, I guess in like the spiritual aspect is a part of who you are, and so when you're in your planning for your cooperatives, what you're going to produce, what you're going to plant, you know, may not be talking about how it relates to a particular Bible verse or concept, but it's kind of we have a sister who's working in the area, a Catholic nun who's working in the area who says that the pastoral work is very much kind of supportive or part of all this process, but it's not, these aren't intentional Christian communities in the sense of, you mentioned the Christian-based community.
Or close with prayer or something like that? No?
No. I would say that, you know, they have their pastoral activities which are separate, or their religious activities which are separate from their production activities. I just have one or two more things. The other thing that they mentioned, well, cooperative, we do focus on the cooperative forms of economic enterprise in terms of, you know, actually trying to sell their products. Although these are small farmers, and a lot of times the small farmer mentalities, you want to be able to say what piece of land is yours, and you can grow, you know, your beans and rice for your family. So there's like a mixed, as the person in the film was saying, there's like a mixed economy, a mixed land tenure system there. And then the other aspect of unity in terms of is really unity with creation, I would say, trying to make it sustainable ecologically. And they alluded to this also in the film. But San Vicente is an area that was basically abandoned during the war. So it's easier, they have more of a problem of in order to do their productive agricultural production, they have to, I can't think of the word in English, but they have to get out the deeply rooted tree trunks. They have to is tree trunk?
Raíces?
Yeah. They call it detroncar.
These stumps.
These stumps. They have to take it in order to plow the land. There's so much overgrowth that they have that advantage, and they still have a lot of trees, the animals that live there. But they have a vision that they also need to maintain that. And the soil is very fertile there because they're in a delta area, so they get all the topsoil from the eroding parts of the erosion from the other parts of the country that are upriver. But that's part of it. So how is this environmentally sustainable? So share is, we focus more on organic farming and organic farming techniques, and which is hard because they're so bombarded with propaganda around the different fertilizers. In other parts of the country, they're heavily dependent on fertilizers just because the soil's nearly dead. There's so much erosion that's taken place. And then the last aspect is, of course, it fits into this whole picture, is the need for access to credit. And so we have supported Salvadoran non-governmental organizations that have started up revolving loan funds and putting capital in that so they can kind of control their own credit system, because these small farmers can't get commercial credit from them. They can't get credit from the commercial banks. And if they do, they work up such a debt sometimes that then there might be foreclosures on the land in the future. Or they're tied. They actually have to sign a contract if they take out a loan that they have to use a certain fertilizer or a certain pesticide. Because the people who own, the men who own the some of the fertilizer companies are on the boards of certain banks, so there's a lot of collusion there. It's a big money-making scam. But those are all the elements, and maybe we could, I know people have been wanting to talk, and I've kind of been cutting you off and say, let me get the whole picture out there. That's pretty much the whole picture. Training, technical assistance, giving them credit, helping women especially, and really enabling them and seeing it as a process, enabling them to do the work, to do the planning, which means it's very slow. Again, with this organics, we start working with maybe 13 cooperatives, really hoping that all of them will do the organics, and we end up with 4 that actually, carry a crop through to fruition. But them being involved, them being the protagonists, is really important, because we've also had a couple of failures in the sense of one story is one community said, okay, we're told, okay, you plant organic sesame, because sesame and cashew already have an import in the United States called Earth Trades that will import certified organic cashew seeds and sesame seeds. And there's a cooperatively owned processing plant in San Vicente who will, as part of the cooperative, process it and get it out. And so there's kind of like a built-in market where they can get good prices. But this community was told, you'll do sesame seeds. And so what happens? They're given the seed, they plant it, but no one does like a check to see it. And they're also given the loan to plant it, or they're given a grant to plant it. So essentially everything's given to them. They're told what to do, but no one checks the seed to make sure that it's really good. I guess you grow a few samples and see if they sprout, and then you know if the seed's good, of good quality. And only half the seeds actually sprouted, because no one in the cooperative felt it was their project, enough of it was their project that they would actually make sure the seeds were good. And then this was being grown during the dry season, so you need irrigation. And something broke down in the irrigation system, and they didn't have the part there immediately. And of course, they didn't have it in the immediate next town. Someone had to get on a bus and go to a town that was farther away to get the replacement part. But it took them 2 weeks to do that, not because the transportation wasn't there, but just because and in those 2 weeks, of course, the rest of the crop died because it needed irrigation. So there's a sense that if they don't feel like this is theirs, and there's something of theirs invested in it, and it's part of their vision of what they want to do, then it's not going to be as successful. It's not theirs, and so they don't really work for it to happen, because everything was given for them. The funds to start it up, they were being paid for their labor to do it. So that's something we've learned from, is that, again, part of it, and they need to even invest something in it to really feel like it's theirs and they want it to work. So that's kind of, you have the share literature to read more about, and maybe, I'm sorry, I tend to go on, so I should let people interrupt me more. Questions or...
Go ahead.
Are there coffee plantations in that area where people can be employed, or what's the situation with the coffee plantations?
The coffee plantations are in the western part of the country. And there are some coffee cooperatives. And that's what we would support. In fact, I know there's organically grown coffee that you can buy from El Salvador that's been imported from El Salvador, grown by cooperatives. The plantations, unfortunately, they pay your whole family works from, you know, ages 3-4 on up. As long as you can pick a coffee bean, you're out there working, and then you're paid maybe $3.50 for the day.
The whole bushel.
You're paid by the bushel. And so you have the whole family out there working, and it's a miserable existence. And then that only lasts for maybe 3 weeks, the coffee harvest, and you have to live off what you've been paid for that 3 weeks' time for the next several months until you go on to the sugarcane harvest. It's a terrible existence.
And sugarcane harvest is hard work.
It's hard work. Yeah.
You get cut up in there, dangerous, lots of hot ants bite the daylight out of you. No kid should be in there. Get ripped up like shreds, like serrated.
The leaves are serrated.
So you go through a sugarcane field. It's not like a corn field. You come out the other side. You're all sliced. And the ants like to build their mounds there. So if you're cutting away and you don't see the mound, you just destroy the mounds, and everything just comes right up. And not to mention the blisters and the heat and all the other good stuff.
Dehydration. So that's why we don't support them. That's what gave rise to the war, was thousands of people working as seasonal laborers on these plantations not getting paid sufficient living wages. Any other comments on development, on how you all view development? How do we, help people in third world countries too? What is our role? Go ahead.
You mentioned yesterday the getting land back to people, and you said that first stage is like 96% done or something, and the work is to make sure they can keep it. Is there a next stage of more land that will come available, do you think?
That the land transfer program was for 50,000 people, and I think the actual universe of beneficiaries came down to like 36 or 37,000. So, it redistributed the land by a few percentage points. But the goal would be that as people pay back that mortgage into the state-owned land bank, is that those funds are available to small landless peasants who could purchase a small piece of land on credit at favorable terms. And so we do see a role for the government, a stronger central government, to be able to keep those kind of institutions available, because commercial banks won't give loans to people who have nothing.
So that would be the means, then, a rotating loan.
And maybe if the future governments, maybe there'd be another agrarian reform.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something that's happened now. And right now we're just trying to work on, as I mentioned in another session, keeping that land in the hands of the people. And one of the things I forgot to mention was infrastructure is an important part of that. So the road that they mentioned in this film, AID did rebuild that, or they paved a certain segment of the road, but it took a lot of work to get AID to do that. And then we're really trying to get the government to rebuild the dikes and the drainage system, because it's a delta area that floods. If you can rebuild those, then maybe you'll have a flood once every 7 years as opposed to every other year, and people can can really grow their crops. Because they were maintained before the war when it was just a few, they said it was 12 coffee family, 12 families that owned all these huge coffee plantations, and now that there's 1,200 people in the area, very small farmers, many of them who were more supportive of the FMLN than any other force. And now, of course, that they were not repairing those dikes and drains, and that's what we're working on too. So that it's sustainable, they can actually stay on the land. Go ahead.
I was thinking about the sweat equity in that you get people to buy into running their land, and you said everything was given, and that in turn when everything is given, they don't seem as motivated because they don't have an investment of that sweat equity involved in there. Now, I guess there must be a creative way to incorporate the sweat equity so that it's a win-win situation, and then they can see that glimmer of hope or, whatever the next stage is going to be. I can kind of see the process, but I guess there's some other pieces that I'm missing to see the whole thing. But it's an interesting, and then cultural things too. To take into account to do that.
Yeah, I think trying to help them transition from like what was more of a grant mentality, where 10 years of war and these communities were all receiving assistance, emergency relief assistance, which was of course grants. You got food, and now to say they don't have what we call a culture of credit, where when you're given a loan, that it's a loan. And of course, we try to do it at favorable terms, or the organizations we're doing with it are maybe 4 or 5% interest, and the market interest rates are like 20%. I mean, they're just phenomenal. So, favorable terms of interest, trying to help people understand that this capital, that if you pay it back, it goes back into the community, and somebody else can take out a loan. And so just working even with that concept.
A credit union.
Because the grant was more like, everything's given to you, and it's kind of like easy come, easy go. It's like you said, there's no sweat equity in that sense. But a loan is, you work, and then you pay back that money, but you've put so much into it already. Mm-hmm. And you have to pay it back, that somehow you work harder to make things work.
What is the definition of base community? El Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala. What is the understanding of what is a base community?
My understanding of a Christian-based community is that it comes out of the Medellin conference, 1968 conference in Colombia, where the Latin American bishops talked about evangelizing the poor. And how do you do that when you've got one priest to every several thousand people? And they talked about developing a whole lay system of people who were trained to essentially give Bible studies and lead basic liturgies, but with without the presence of the sacrament.
Without consecrating.
Yeah, and so that a base community would be a nucleus of people who would gather in Bible study, reflection, and worship in the absence of a priest, and then a priest could do monthly Eucharist services. And they were persecuted because, as they began to study the Bible and saw God speaking to them through the Bible, they realized that they're what they've been told all their lives, which is that be poor now and you'll get your reward in heaven, wasn't really what they were finding in the Bible. So that's the definition. It's specifically, and in these rural communities, there are pastoral groups of, they call them pastoral in the sense of, because they're dealing with the word.
So they're not related to the amount of land or the numbers of people. They could vary, like a house church.
Yeah, kind of like a house church.
Okay.
Or a Bible study.
Right. We're doing some work in Nicaragua, and I'm reading the history of Nicaragua and then different books about it, trying to learn as much as I can. Mm-hmm. I've not been there yet. I hope to go maybe in a couple of years, but we have a group going this summer. But the whole thing there, and I guess it's similar to El Salvador, is that the lay catechists during the time of both the Contra movement in Nicaragua and the FLMN in El Salvador were seen as political catechists as well. That is, they were seen as people who were dangerous because they had a sense of community, a sense of support, and the liberation theology motif, which kind of came out of that. And therefore, on the one hand, there was a support community, and on the other hand, they were persecuted, arrested, killed, disappeared, etc. Because they were catechists. And I think that that's something that's relatively unknown to the American church. I think that when they think of base community, I know people in my own community, they think of that as a communistic unit of mutual farming or something. I mean, their concept of base community is that it's a commune, and cooperative farming means this kind of thing. And it has nothing to do with the catechetical effort to create a spiritual community.
My understanding of the base community is the spiritual community, out of which comes a sense of what we may or must do with the land, with health care and so forth. And am I right that Paulo Ferreira's writings would be central there to the process of base communities?
Certainly to the whole learning experience.
And he writes so simply. And that was most helpful to me, I think, of all of the readings, to just get some sense of what the...
Well, my sense in the Christian-based communities in El Salvador was pretty much it was the Bible, and then it was what, you know, listening to Archbishop Romero's sermons, which were broadcast by radio. And so it wasn't so much some of the other writers. Used Paulo Freire. Yeah. They used Paulo Freire's method in teaching in literacy, in terms of how you break up the syllables in Spanish and teach it that way. And also, definitely in these communities, all learning was based on their history as a people, not on something foreign like math. It could be, I attended one class, they call it popular education. It was, somehow they were teaching math, but they were involving a theme of Archbishop Romero. And everything that they draw from their own experience in there to be able to teach concepts of math or of... But in terms of the Christian community, I think it was really more based on the Bible. That's my sense of it, and discussions.
Well, the strong sense I got was of a use of the Bible that puts it in a dialectical relationship with the people's experience. Mm-hmm. Like if we were the base community and we were reading the Bible, each one of us would talk about what that means in our lives and what we're called to do then. And I don't think it's a very heady thing in some ways, but, you know, a really life-based kind of thing, isn't
kind
it?
Kind of like a parable, that Jesus would write parables, little stories that relate to your surrounding community. Mm-hmm. So if you were talking about mustard seed, you know, everyone would know what a mustard seed and how to plant it. And maybe they incorporate a coffee bean, a sugar cane, or plátanos, bananas or whatever, and maybe make the analogy to that, because that's what they're working with every day. That's what they're immersed in.
And the priority of help for the poor.
Right.
Things like that.
To get down to, that's the way I would.
Yeah.
Getting back to that whole idea of the problem of involving people in responsibility and realizing loans instead of grants, I'm involved in Habitat in community, and it's been very interesting because from being kind of involved with the building part, I've moved to what we call the family nurture part, and that particular group within our is much tougher on families as far as having consequences when they don't pay, and a long, long process of educating on that the bill to pay for your house is as important as the bill to pay for your food, as mm-hmm. to pay for your lights. And it's been interesting as a committee, because then we go to the board and people are ready to sort of forgive and not have some consequences. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if it came down to someone losing their house, it'd be a long way down the road. But we now have a very quick notice that mm-hmm. if someone isn't paying, they hear it. We model it after a bank in notice about being in arrears. And of course, they're having a problem, then you work out a system. But it's been interesting to see, as a family nurture committee, we kind of laugh about the fact we're almost all social worker types, mm-hmm. and yet it's us who will say, well, we've really got to teach people about payments and how you have, because part of the process is to learn how to function in a world that doesn't forgive all the debts. And ultimately, we, you know, probably, I don't know at what point we'd actually foreclose, but we've given at least one foreclosure notice to a family when they were, you know, not paying. They would pay, they'd buy a new car, but they wouldn't buy, you know, pay the house bill. Well, then you have to, it's all different in the United States. But it is kind of an interesting process. It's tough love you have to figure out.
That's part of empowerment. I mean, ideally, you want them to be able to exist without you. So yeah. if you're creating dependencies mm-hmm. on you.
Too forgiving yeah. without teaching them that they have to be.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.